from deep inside your radio.
Well, we're in New Orleans. It's got to start with a mistake, doesn't it? Isn't that the way it... Doesn't that tell you everything's back to normal, ladies and gentlemen? Hello from the French... Live from the French Quarter. And that was my mistake. No fingers are being pointed. No animals are being pointed in the making of this program. But the normal meter is so close to 100 right now that I can't tell the difference. It's hot in New Orleans, so that there you go. This from a listener. I noticed this past Thursday that CNN.com dropped its war on terror section. Okay? So, Colin Powell's back and everything's fine, I guess. And if you don't, more signs that things are back to normal? Sure. Sure. Glad you asked. At the behest of longtime Clinton nemesis, Representative Bob Barr, Republican of Georgia, the General Accounting Office is fixing to release a report which cost, reports indicate, about $200,000 to compile. You know, a prolonged, thorough investigation that will show that vandalism by the departing members of the Clinton administration at the time of the changeover to the George W. Bush administration totaled $14,000. So we paid $200,000 to find out that the damage was $14,000. Because all those W's had to be replaced on the computer keyboards. That's normal. And for sheer normality, you can't beat this. Dateline Los Angeles. And because this is a fairly special broadcast today, well, you know they're all special because they keep happening. But this one, I think, needs a little obvious risibility at the top to compensate for what will follow. So here we go. And as I say, normality here. Dateline Los Angeles, O.J. Simpson says that the law firm suing him for $204,000 in unpaid bills from the custody battle for his children will, quote, have to wait because he doesn't have the money to pay them. One thing was clear at the beginning of the custody case. I was broke, Simpson said. I could not be more grateful to a group of people than I am to them, he said of his lawyers. But he says he regrets the case dragged on for so long before an agreement was reached for him to have custody. He says his financial situation remains precarious with all of his funds devoted to the welfare of his children. I don't go out and buy new clothes, he says. I don't take trips unless it's for business. What business would... The law firm that sued Simpson in Orange County says he failed to pay $204,000 in bills. It seeks that amount, plus 10% interest. The lawsuit says Simpson breached the contract by making payments for a period of time and then ceased to make payments. So that the only thing that's not in that story is a further quote in which Simpson vowed to spend the rest of his remaining time looking for the real clients. Hello, welcome to the show.
I feel so damn good. I'll be glad when I got the blues.
Yeah.
Come on. And I feel so damn good. I'll be glad when I got the blues. Come on. And I'm so down being up. I'll be winning when I start to lose. Well, come on. Street. Huh. I feel so damn good. I'll be glad when I got the blues. I'm so down in love. I'll be winning when I start to lose. Yes. Damn, I feel all right. And I need a surprise in store. woman. I feel so damn good. I'll be glad when I got the moon. I'm so down being up. I'll be winning when I start to lose. Little love, I feel alright. Alright. Yes, I do. Alright. I feel alright. Alright. Ooh. Alright. I feel alright. Alright. Yeah, now. Alright. I feel alright. Alright. Can you hear me? Alright. Alright. Yes, I can see you. Alright. So all damn good. I'll be happy when I get the blues. Alright.
The fire and the fury, yeah.
Live from the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. I might have to take a refreshing swig of purified tap water here. Excuse me. Oh, boy, some nice flavor notes on that. Oh, it's a product of a large soft drink conglomerate. Don't worry about it. About which, of course, nothing happens. Well, almost nothing happens by accident on this broadcast, about which more momentarily. But first, ladies and gentlemen, our special feature, our regular feature, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Wow, so many apologies. So little time. No, we got so much time. And we got so many apologies and so much time. I was wrong. I misspoke. The son of Libyan leader Muammar, don't call him Mo, Gaddafi, he has received an apology from a London newspaper. He has therefore dropped his libel suit against said newspaper. Saif Gaddafi, a 29-year-old architect and engineer, accepted the apology by the Sunday Telegraph. The case had recently gone to trial. The paper, 7 years ago, called him an untrustworthy maverick with his own sinister henchmen. That's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good... I would love to have henchmen. Bob, would you be my... Okay, Bob Dunn here will be my henchman. But he's not sinister enough. He's sitting here reading Sierra magazine. That's not nearly... Read something about guns, man. Outside the High Court in London, a smiling Gaddafi said, quote, "I came here to London to clear my name and correct these false things. I'm very happy now they've corrected the mistake. I'm going to call my father. I think he will be happy." See? Muammar, don't call him Mo, Gaddafi is now happy because of the apology. The Sunday Telegraph accepted the articles were inaccurate and agreed to apologize in court and in its next edition. But wait. Oh, wait. Please. Dateline New York. New York Cardinal Edward Egan offers an apology for mistakes he may have made. That's any married person recognizes that apology. If you, for any reason, may have felt bad, I'm sorry. Edward Egan is offering an apology for mistakes he may have made. We'll check to see whether he made them. In failing to address cases involving sexual abuse of children by priests. In a letter being read this weekend in archdiocese churches, Egan, the spiritual leader of 2.5 million New York Catholics, tried to assuage concerns about his commitment to eradicating sexual abuse in the archdiocese. Well, don't let Michael Jackson be ordained would be step one. The U.S. Catholic Church is mired in, you know about that. Egan has been under fire for allegedly being lax in disciplining pedophile priests. But they like that. Oh, no, that's... and assisting victims both in New York and in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I consistently sought and acted upon the best independent advice available to me, he says in the letter, from medical experts and behavioral scientists. Really? It is clear that today we have a much better understanding of this problem, he continued, if in hindsight we also discovered that mistakes may have been made as regards prompt removal of priests and assistance to victims, I am deeply sorry. Wow. Nixonian, you think? Mistakes may have been made. Don't mistakes usually have makers? Some mistakes make themselves, I guess. The Vatican is said to be displeased, according to Reuters, that U.S. church officials did not tell Rome sooner how much damage the scandal was causing the church's moral authority in the United States. Send him a subscription to a newspaper, maybe. They don't read the American papers at the Vatican? I think they do. Maybe. Maybe they don't trust him either. In his letter, Egan said current New York Archdiocese policy was to prevent abuse and to act immediately when an allegation of abuse arises. Okay. That's his apology. But wait! Come on! So many more. Ralph Nader received a letter of apology and a check from the Commission on Presidential Debates this week. That wouldn't be late, would it? No guarantee that he or other third-party candidates would ever get to participate in future debates. Nader sued the commission after being blocked from attending the first presidential debate between Bush and Gore in October of 2000. He had a ticket to sit in an overflow viewing room at the debate site, but the commission's security team refused to let him in. He demanded apologies from Bush, Gore, and the commission, as well as a $25,000 contribution to an electoral reform center at Harvard. When commission officials refused, Nader sued. You know he's going to sue. Nah, Nader, he'll never sue. Oh, God, it's Nader. This week, when the trial was to begin, the commission agreed to give Nader $25,000, which won't go to the to the Electoral Reform Center at Harvard. It will go to Nader's lawyers. And accompanying the check will be a letter saying, quote, "We apologize for the misunderstanding," unquote, of the security consultant who ordered him out of the room. Nader also received $26,000 from the security consultant. He said none of the settlement money will go to the Electoral Reform Center. Nader claimed vindication. Janet Brown, executive director of the commission, disagreed, saying none of Nader's claims were substantiated. But a trial could have cost the commission $250,000, on top of what Nader estimated were about $500,000 in commission legal fees already spent on the case. The payment will come from and the commission's insurance company, of course. So they did not apologize for not letting him in the debate. They just apologized for not letting him in the room where the other guys were debating. And the Electoral Reform Center at Harvard, they can whistle for some money because... But wait, this may be, ladies and gentlemen, since we've begun this feature, the apologies of the week, this, I would say, must be the richest week. Something happened. Something's abroad. Something's afoot. People are sorry. Mistakes may have been made this week. And rectification. There's some desire for rectification going on. For example, U.S. Congressman Tom the Hammer DeLay has apologized. What started as a question to him about which colleges offer an appropriate Christian education became a forum on the attributes of two of Texas's prominent institutions of higher education, Texas A&M and Baylor. During a question-answer session, the House Majority Whip was asked where good Christians who believe in creationism should send their children to college. not wanting to say, why bother? And not realizing he was being taped, the congressman replied, not Texas A&M or Baylor. Don't send your kids to Baylor, Mr. DeLay said, and don't send your kids to A&M. There are still some Christian schools out there, good, solid schools. Now, they may be little, they may not be as prestigious as Stanford, but your kids will get a good, solid, godly education. Unquote. Mr. DeLay has apologized and said his comments had been taken out of context. What context would they work in, you wonder? Said a colleague of Tom DeLay, Senator Phil Graham, if I had a chance of getting to heaven based on being from Texas A&M as compared to be from anywhere else, I'd take Texas A&M. Of course, Phil Graham used to teach economics at Texas A&M. Said of former Republican Congressman Jack Fields, Tom DeLay must have been taken out of context. I know unequivocally that Baylor is committed to the Christian faith. The recording, the tape recording, including DeLay suggesting that parents should pressure universities to throw the PC out and bring God in, I don't think he means the personal computer, but you never know, was made public Wednesday by Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. DeLay said his remarks were misinterpreted. Well, were they out of context or were they misinterpreted? Or am I misinterpreting the lack of context? My response to a concerned parent has created a misunderstanding, DeLay said in a written statement. Let me be Texas clear. I've been a long-time supporter of Baylor and Texas A&M. His daughter attended Texas A&M, and Mr. DeLay was kicked out of Baylor for misbehaving. He had too rigorous a social life. This was before he became an exterminator, which was his profession before he became House Majority Whip. Someone complained at this Worldview Weekend event at First Baptist Church of Pearland, Texas, that too few universities offer God-directed creationism as an explanation for human origin, and asked DeLay for advice on colleges, said the Reverend Sonny Foraker. In the context, he was just encouraging a person to seek out colleges that would put that view in, said Mr. Foraker. Mr. Foraker said he thought it was unethical to secretly tape Mr. DeLay. Okay, I didn't even do it, but I'll apologize for that. Mistakes were made in the taping of Tom DeLay. Another British apology. Cable TV customers got Scooby-Doo on every channel in Britain for a few hours. A technical gaffe sent Scooby-Doo instead of the normal programs on all the normal channels. A transmission switcher malfunctioned, sending the Cartoon Network out. Thousands of customers were hit. We would like to apologize, said a spokesman for the cable system. It affected only analog customers. See? They'll do anything to make you switch to digital, including shoving Scooby-Doo down every channel. But more about digital in a moment, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, because I will be ranting on that subject momentarily. Finally, in the apologies of the week, Abercrombie & Fitch is pulling a line of T-shirts that triggered protests from Asian groups who said they reinforced negative stereotypes. How? The T-shirts show smiling men with slanted eyes and conical hats. That's how. We're very, very, very sorry. Three verys, says Abercrombie & Fitch spokesman Hampton Carney. It's never been our intention to offend anyone. He couldn't say how many of the T-shirts were in stores or how much recall would cost the company. The T-shirts will also be removed from sale on the company's website. These graphic T-shirts were designed with the sole purpose of adding humor and levity to our fashion line, Carney said. Since some of our customers have been offended by their content, we're pulling the shirts. One of the company's T-shirts reads, quote, Wong Brothers Laundry Service. Two Wongs can make it white. It's really misleading as to what Asian people are, says Michael Chang, vice chairman of the Asian American Students Association at Stanford. Oh, Stanford. Well, of course, they don't learn creationism there. What the hell are they supposed to do? Get upset at T-shirts. This is this PC thing. Put God back in there, will you? Oh, sorry, that was Tom DeLay talking. The stereotypes they depict are more than a century old. You're seeing laundry service. You're seeing basically an entire religion and philosophy being trivialized. One shirt features a smiling Buddha figure with the slogan, Abercrombie and Fitch Buddha Bash. Get your Buddha on the floor. Another reads, walk and bowl, let the good times roll, Chinese food and bowling. The company makes fun of everyone, the spokesman for Abercrombie and Fitch said, noting its previous clothing designs have included foreign waitresses, taxi drivers, and Britons. Last year, women's organizations railed against the company for its ads featuring young, barely clad models in sexually suggestive poses. I would say, all things considered, not referring to a radio program misnomered thusly, that scantily clad women would actually be a better bet for Abercrombie & Fitch at this point in time. You know, but that's not an endorsement. Don't do that. Don't think I'm doing that, because I am not. Other news of the week, ladies and gentlemen. In its latest rebuff to demands for an independent body to decide the legal status of captives at Guantanamo Bay, the United States said detainees have no right to lawyers, not even Nedra Ruiz. Oh, you haven't forgotten already. Please tell me you haven't forgotten. The defense lawyer in the dog mauling case who crawled on all fours and barked in court. Anyway, she wasn't available to defend the detainees. And the detainees can be held as long as the war on terrorism lasts. Well, it's off the CNN website, so I guess that's good news for them. We are so back to normal that Ann Robinson is now the weakest link. The quiz show presenter, who callously scythes her way through badly written put-downs, is in danger of being canceled here in the United States, only a year after landing one of the most lucrative contracts in broadcasting. What? She and her program are struggling against plummeting ratings. The network bosses, this is from the Times of London, the network bosses are poised for the kill. According to insiders at NBC, primetime days of Weakest Link are numbered. The studied nastiness of Robinson, who signed a contract that stood to make her $20 million, has paled faster than expected. NBC confirms the show's future is under review, saying it was one of a number of programs on the bubble. Their fate's in the balance because of weak ratings. NBC executives are weighing whether The Weakest Link will feature in their next scheduling plans. Robinson is on holiday, on vacation, and unavailable for comment. Her agent says, no, we've not been told officially the show might be canceled. Yes, the ratings have fallen, but NBC says they're very happy with the demographics of who's watching. Four 18-year-olds, I guess, is really all it takes to make NBC happy. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Michael Powell, son of Colin, weighed in this week on the subject of increasing consolidation of ownership of the media. You know, a lot of people are bitching because I think, what is it, only three people own everything now? Every radio station in the country is owned, except for this one, is owned by one of three companies. And Michael Powell says, quote, I do have regular Americans who write me complaining about the concentration of the media and viewpoints, certainly, but I also have a lot of neighbors who yawn at the whole thing. If anything, I think we feel a tad besieged that we live in an all-consuming media environment every second. Is there variety in TV? I mean, I can watch everything from a thoughtful piece on history on the History Channel to Fear Factor. I think we're in a period right now where we're seeing the very best that television has produced and the very worst. Discussing concerns that the proliferation of media giants can stifle the diversity of ideas, Powell said, what really is the Disney or Rupert Murdoch viewpoint that comes through on their programming? Really? The Citizen Kane anxiety could be genuine in some instances, Powell continued, but it's very difficult to discern what exactly are these viewpoints that are eking through that we're worried about. I think to the average consumer, this is the FCC commissioner talking, this is too sublime a concept for a lot of them to be agitated by. Michael Powell, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, ladies and gentlemen. And now, for those of you who may be thinking about flying, some news and a tale of airport security. I have another taste of this purified tap water. Man, they added just the right minerals. Airline passengers should have at least 34 inches of leg room on long-haul flights, a judge, British judge said this week after a businessman won compensation for sitting in a straitjacket seat on a jet. A tour jet. JMC, one of Britain's largest tour operators, was told by Judge Gareth Edwards that its treatment of passengers by forcing them to sit in a space of 29 inches during an 8-hour flight was intolerable. Brian Horan, a company director, won an award. He's 57 years old. He had tests for deep vein thrombosis after complaining of pain in his legs when he returned from Canada on a Boeing 767 in April of last year. Judge Edwards said of the conditions endured by Mr. Horan, in my own view, it was not merely uncomfortable, it was intolerable. It might perhaps have been endurable for a 2-hour flight, but an 8-hour flight is a totally different matter. Campaigners have long argued that deep vein thrombosis is caused by cramped economy class conditions. although experts say victims are as likely to suffer the condition in roomier seats. Judge Edwards said seat pitch, the distance between the backrest of a seat and the back of the seat in front of it, should be at least 34 inches. Mr. Horan likened his conditions to a veal crate. He was awarded $750 plus costs of $3,500 and said he'd been unable to read or look at newspapers during the flight and that eating or drinking was extraordinarily difficult. And a tale of airport security from Peter in Houston. Houston? Don't let your kid go to A&M, Peter. Quote, for about 2 months I flew with an expired driver's license because the post office had mislaid my renewed driver's license. Granted, my photo ID was valid, except for the address. I went to the DPS, which I guess is like the DMV, to change my address, but of course the great state of Texas is so technologically advanced that you have to wait for your new driver's license to be sent to you from Austin in the mail. Every other state in the past decade just gives you your new ID while you're at the motor vehicle department. But I flew through Bush Intercontinental Airport 3 times, Phoenix twice, Minneapolis once, and never got a wink of notice that my driver's license was cut in one corner. I even rented a car with that license. Only in Los Angeles at LAX did anyone say anything, only at the gate. They let me through with a comment about Texas being behind. The gate agent liked that. You feel more secure now, ladies and gentlemen? All right, fine. Tales of airport security, often imitated, seldom duplicated on the show. Word to the wise, department. I've been at you for good cause about seeing my my fine, smart, funny, listen to me pitch now, independent comedy film, Teddy Bear's Picnic. And you know the thing about the motion picture business, ladies and gentlemen, it is so aligned to the younger folk, that when they open a movie, even a small independent movie, they assume that you hear about it and you drop everything and go that weekend. And if you don't, they decided that the movie doesn't work. Now, you know, grown-ups have children and babysitters and dentists and things, and they say, oh, well, that sounds interesting. I'll go see it next week. And then what the... So in the what the department, it's not in New York. It's not in San Francisco anymore. I told you. I wasn't crying wolf. But it's moved. It's still in Hollywood at midnight. But really, if you want to see it this weekend, fly to Southern California. It's in Pasadena. Yes. And just to give you a sense of what's in store for you, once you head for Pasadena, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tony Limone.
Pasadena, city of the rose, throws its spell on me. In Pasadena, restaurants never close. What a way to be. There's peace and plenty implied in her name. There's love and hatred for every guy and every dame. The brass is cleaner. People wear nice clothes in Pasadena, L.A. Pasadena, 20 miles from sea. And every year, a queen. Thank you. When Pasadena dresses up for me, well, well, well. You know what I mean. Parades of roses, how soon we forget. And children's noses are pressed against the safety net. No grass is greener. land of spades and holes in Pasadena. She's a Maya Bambina in Pasadena, my, my.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a while since we had anything from the Found Objects Department of Le Show. This is the department where we find actual things, real, not made up, not funny, well, funny, but not made up, and present them to you for your edification, your amusement, perhaps your astonishment, who knows. I can't regulate your reactions. I'm doing too much already. So this week, ladies and gentlemen, it is excerpts, highlights, I should say, from the Coca-Cola stockholders meeting in New York City. Now, it's interesting in its own right for the musical number that you'll hear in the middle here, because, as you know, I'm an aficionado of industrial music. It may be America's only true art form. Forget jazz. Industrial music is the only thing. We're the only country that does it, so that's our unique contribution to world culture. But it's interesting for another reason as well. The MC, the master of ceremonies, the host, the smiling avuncular guide through the wonderful world of Coca-Cola, who even interviews Doug Daft, the chairman of Coca-Cola at one point during these highlights, is none other than Charlie Rose. Now forget PBS. We know he's on PBS, and PBS is bought and paid for a million different ways to Tuesday. But Charlie Rose is also a correspondent for 60 Minutes, too. As a matter of fact, if you go to the CBS News website, it says Charlie Rose, a former CBS News anchor, was named a correspondent for 60 Minutes, too, in November 1998. Two different sources at CBS News confirmed my understanding that CBS News correspondents are not allowed to do commercials or endorsements for products or companies or things, or, you know. So those are the facts. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we take you to New York City, where Charlie Rose is hosting the Coca-Cola stockholders meeting.
NASCAR is the fastest growing sport in the United States. 13 million fans attended NASCAR events last year, with average attendance numbers doubling those of the Super Bowl. It is worth pointing out that NASCAR fans are three times as likely to purchase products of NASCAR sponsors and are 94% more likely to have positive feelings about those sponsors. Coca-Cola has been partnered with NASCAR since its beginnings, connecting with its fans' passion for the sport. Please welcome Joe Gibbs and NASCAR driver Tony Stewart. Welcome, Tony.
Great to have you.
Before we talk about Coke, you said to me backstage that football and NASCAR have a lot in common.
Well, I think we do, and Coca-Cola has a very high standard of achievement. They maintain that through their relationships, and we embrace that. As partners, Coca-Cola is unmatched in their ability to connect teams like ours to their unique family of connections. For instance, some of our bottler partners are here today in the audience. We're connected with them through their retail accounts to our consumers. This creates an unbeatable value opportunity for everyone connected. This is a special opportunity and a win-win for organizations like ours. We truly feel like we're a part of the Coca-Cola family.
You sure are.
Thank you, Joe. Okay.
Thank you.
Few companies are able to connect as completely with consumers in the way that Coca-Cola is. Those are perhaps responsible for making the strongest partnerships the company can count on. Take a look at this. Michael Eisner.
I'm Michael Eisner, chairman of the Walt Disney Company. There are only a handful of truly great names in the worldwide consumer marketplace. I think everyone would agree that two of them are Coca-Cola and Disney. So it only takes common sense to realize that our two companies represent a wonderful match. Actually, the people who first had the common sense to associate Disney with Coke were our company's founders, Walt and Roy Disney. Back in 1955, Coke was at Disneyland on opening day, and last month, Coke was there when we opened our newest theme park, Disney Studios Paris. Over the years, this relationship has become deeper and more sophisticated. At our theme parks, our guests aren't just served Coke anymore. Instead, We have places where they can interact with a Coke experience. After all, what word comes to mind when you think of Coca-Cola? Refreshing. So at Disneyland Resort and at Walt Disney World, our Imagineers have activated, to use a Coke term, the beverage experience. Working with Coke, we have created themed experiences that take the concept of refreshment to the next level. At one, for instance, our guests get refreshed by standing under the cool mist that comes out of the exhaust of a rocket ship blasting off. At another, a car wash has been magically transformed into a frozen misting cool wash where you can grab a Coke and cool off from the Florida sun. Of course, throughout our parks, we don't just offer guests Coke any more than we just offer them Mickey Mouse. We also serve them the full range of great Coke brands. And beginning this year, we are gearing up to offer your water brand, Dasani. At Disney, we are very careful about the kinds of products and companies with which we associate. After all, the Disney name is our most valuable asset. We feel that, in the case of these juice beverages, both the product, healthy drinks for kids, and the company, Coca-Cola, are a perfect fit for the values of fun, fantasy, and family that Disney stands for. Coke is a company that's also a great American institution. There aren't a lot of corporations you can say that about, and I want to thank you for supporting this one.
Thank you. Michael Eisner. Mickey Mouse and Coca-Cola. It might start with an ad and develop through a marketing program, but a meaningful relationship with a consumer deepens only through initiatives that touch people on a more fundamental level. While the U.S. may be the birthplace of Coca-Cola, Mexico has the highest per capita consumption of Coca-Cola anywhere in the world, the highest capacity consumption. Music has been one of the cornerstones of connections with consumers and an important fact of Coca-Cola's heritage. In New York City, Coca-Cola contributes to the city's musical heritage. It has invested in the historic reclamation of the Apollo Theater in Harlem. And most recently, the Coca-Cola Company is partnering with Jazz at Lincoln Center, America's largest organization dedicated to jazz music, and helping it build its new home at Columbus Circle.
Every day around the world, Coca-Cola touches our lives and makes a difference. Providing a child with a book to read.
An ad on a billboard.
Helping out a Little League baseball team.
Creating business opportunities in a community.
Bringing someone needed medical attention.
Sponsoring a film festival.
Partnering the Olympics.
Building a school.
Purifying water.
I just love the commercials.
Every day.
However it happens, Coca-Cola creates lifelong value by connecting to our lives around the world every day.
And by staying committed to the things that really matter to us,
to people and our passions.
With this
Coca-Cola's unparalleled network of human relationships.
With this one-to-one, community-by-community dialogue all around the world, Coca-Cola embraces the future.
In particular, the demand for so many different beverages. Different cultures, different age groups, from morning till night, Coca-Cola is ready to deliver.
I need to rehydrate.
I want something purple.
Something hot.
Something cold.
I want a pretty bottle.
Something light.
I need energy.
I need vitamins.
I need to unwind.
I need something refreshing.
And less filling.
No juice.
With juice.
No juice. Lots of fizz.
I like tea.
I'll drink anything.
On the rocks.
I just want a Coke.
I want a Fanta.
Choice!
I want something red.
Something lemony.
No calories.
I like the sports bottle tops.
I just want something
different.
First, we need
the big idea.
There it is.
The big idea.
No, no, no. It's many ideas from all around the world. Coca-Cola is expanding the many ways it touches our lives and connects to our needs. How? Through innovation.
New drinks are being created every day for all of our needs.
New drinks for new demands.
Building strong foundations.
Adults over 40 are the fastest growing population in some of Coca-Cola's key top 10 markets. In the next decade, we will see an increase of 180 million adults demanding beverages. And with its own nutrition research center, Coca-Cola is ready to deliver.
Water is the fastest growing category of drinks anywhere. In fact, Coca-Cola's water business grew by 63% last year, with Dasani in the U.S., Kinley in India, and Bon Aqua in Europe.
In the next 5 years, Coca-Cola could become the world's leading water company, providing the safety and trust that consumers demand. You see, innovation not only makes life easier, it's good business.
Because you can drive all these new drinks through this amazing network of relationships.
So whether it's all natural,
or something healthy,
a reward,
something fun,
something new and tingly, like Diet Coke with lemon,
or something to take to the park with my new boyfriend,
o algo que me lleva a mi casa, something that makes me feel home.
Whatever our needs, from grandson to granddad, Coca-Cola will always have what we're looking for.
From our wants and our needs and our wishes, so many choices.
Many choices.
Each of us different, our lives and our dreams. One world.
Lifelong value creation is built on each of the programs of the Coca-Cola Company, wherever it undertakes them around the world. It is creating lifelong value by making commitment to improving people's lives, community by community, consumer by consumer, and individual by individual. Insight is gained through understanding. Both, as all of you here know, are based on communication. As you have seen, the Coca-Cola Company's line of communication with consumers all over the globe could not be stronger. Through innovation, it knows how, it knows where, and it knows when to be present in the consumer's life. Thanks to the Coca-Cola network, and as a result, Coca-Cola is invited to be a part of people's lives everywhere. I mean, innovation is almost a mindset in the same way that quality is. It's a way of thinking about the future.
It's a way of being comfortable with change, with always looking into the future, with almost never being satisfied with the position that you have right now, wanting to constantly improve it, wanting to constantly add value.
As we come to the end of this showcase, it's been great for me to be here. When you think about the Coca-Cola family, you don't normally think about people like Tiger Woods and Robert Redford, Wynton Marsalis, all of these people who have make up what is the Coca-Cola family, and it is a privilege to be associated with those people. The business end will come after this, but this is the business of Coca-Cola, being part of a family, being worldwide, doing well and doing good at the same time.
CBS News correspondent Charlie Rose, doing well by doing good. What was that song?
Ficar
Vem me amar, me chamar, vem me pegar, me levar a uma festa a dois. É só o que resta pra nós. Tem tanta gente, a gente nem vê a hora de ficar. Eu e você, nós dois, como tem que ser, sem pensar.
Ladies and gentlemen, a listener writes, the woman having trouble trashing her TV might try what I did 2 weeks ago. My wife and I put our ailing Toshiba out in front of our Brooklyn home and attached the following note. Yes, it works. Picture a little dark. Help yourself. God bless America. The TV was gone inside of an hour. So there you go. You know, this is apropos of the problem of getting rid of TVs for the digital transition to come. And six major consumer electronics companies announced their support this week for a new piracy-resistant digital connector for high-definition TV sets. It could bring more high-definition movies from Hollywood. On the other hand, existing digital TVs would need to be replaced. So, start writing your notes. Louisiana. I want to thank, as always, Mr. Bob Dunn of WWL-TV for making the production side of this broadcast. A piece, Beignet, actually.
Excuse me, Harry.
Yes, Ralph.
Could we just have a bit of a chat before the end of the show?
Ralph,
please.
Ralph the talking computer, a bit of a chat.
A bit of a chat.
I heard that you really last heard were entertained. Well, I guess we can't, Ralph. So, that's that. Maybe next week, babe. How normal can you get, ladies and gentlemen? Well, I still want to thank Bob Dunn. You know, he doesn't make these machines. And I want to thank you for listening. Pasadena's not that far away, you know, if you start now. I'm going to have just one more swig of this purified tap water before they become the number one water company in the world, so I know what I'm dealing with. That's one swig too many. I bet the machine works now, Bob. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan. Around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations around the world, wherever you are. Two locations on your computer, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. That's way too many W's. And it would be just like O.J. being able to pay his lawyer, if you'd be agreeing to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. And Tony Limone is Michael McKeon. You know, I never had a War on Terror section on my website, so I didn't have anything to drop. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from the French Quarter.